I'm TJ Manisterski, and this is my Coaching Project podcast, where I connect with leaders in search of breakthrough knowledge. Breakthrough knowledge challenges the status quo, changes your opinion, or fundamentally opens your eyes in a way there's no turning back. Today, I'm with Cody Royal, head coach of Canada's National Men's AFL program. And for those of you that don't know what that is, that's Aussie Rules Football. For the last decade, he's been writing about leadership, culture, and organizational dynamics and how it contributes to competitive advantage. His debut book, Where Others Won't, explores the leadership and culture strategies of the most forward-thinking organizations in sport and business. He also has a podcast by the same name, Where Others Won't. And from a personal note, it's really cool to have Cody here today with me because his podcast was the first podcast I ever stumbled onto, and it really caught my attention for a couple of reasons. One, we're both expats, so he's from Australia living in Toronto. I'm from Toronto living in Boston, and he talks about things that I think are awesome, and I guess maybe I like his accent too. So, Cody, welcome. Thanks for coming, joining me today.
TJ, thanks for having me on. And yeah, a little bit of reversal, I guess. Me being from where you're from, and I don't know how that works, but mate, I love breakthrough knowledge. I wrote that down. Sorry to hijack the show straight away. This is what happens when coaches get together, right? You say one thing, I'm like, oh my God, that's beautiful. Breakthrough knowledge. Thank you for that.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess I'll elaborate a little bit. And what that means to me is that's the breakthrough knowledge versus incremental knowledge, and how so often we're inundated with information all the time. And it's hard to filter it. It's hard to decide, like, I can't consume it all. So what am I going to choose to consume? And it was actually an article posted by your buddy and another person that I follow, Fergus Connolly, that talked about this. This is where I learned about it. And incremental knowledge is, it's like reading you've read 10 leadership books, so you read an 11th. And they're all pretty similar. So you learn a little bit, but it's really reinforcing things you already know. It's not really changing the game for you. Breakthrough knowledge is when I find something that is new or it changes my opinion. It's really forced me to look at things in a new way. And I know that although you write about leadership and talk about leadership, and so do I, the topics that come up do change your viewpoints, and it's looking at things in a different way. So I've never gone in that much depth about explaining what it is. So I appreciate you taking that hijacking road for me here. But one of those things, Cody, that talking about leadership and seeing things from a different way is something you said, and I picked up on and really thought a lot about, is the idea of user experience in coaching. So from a player development and a team building, team chemistry standpoint, how taking that concept of user experience, how we usually think about that is like when we go to a website, or I'm not a gamer, but I know that video games have a big user player experience component to them, using software, things of that nature. But taking that concept and applying it to coaching, I'd love for you to just, with that sort of open-ended intro into that topic, can you elaborate a little bit?
Yeah, I love this topic too. So the ironic thing is I've probably learned more about coaching through working 9 to 5 in this field called user experience. And I didn't know what it was before I got into it, but yeah, you're exactly right. So the concept is how human beings interact with technology. And so as you touched on there, it might be a website. But within that, what it really means is all the different facets, how they fit together, how you guide the user. So you, because you're at the center of the decision making, how you guide them through a flow. So it could be a form. It could be that you're directing them to your shop. It could be that you're trying to get them to complete some action. And the idea behind user experience is we can use words, we can use graphics, we can use the flow of information. We can use checkboxes, like all these different elements and how we fit them together so the user can actually solve their own problem. Because you'll remember, if you're old enough, you'll remember that error messages used to come up on your computer and they were just gobbledygook. You had no idea. numbers and letters and, you know, and what that was developers wrote those error messages for themselves so that they could diagnose problems, because no one knew how to use computers. So the developers would write them for themselves. Nowadays, that's flipped on its head, and it said, well, why don't we help whoever's using the computer solve that problem for themselves? And so I'll draw it back to coaching, because this is what's magic about it, is we have been doing the same thing in coaching. We have talked and built training plans, and our whole ethos is built around making ourselves feel better and us as coaches diagnosing the problem. And we need to move closer to pure user experience and put the players at the center of those problem-solving opportunities in practice, in life in general, so that they can solve the problems, because ultimately that's what has to happen in a game. And so my point here is we need to stop making ourselves feel better and start considering the user experience of our players, because they're the ones that have to actually do it.
Yeah, there's a real, I guess, art to that, doing that. Like, so you have to be pretty skilled as a coach to be able to take your concepts, or like your, whether it's your systems or your practice plan or all the reasons behind the things you're doing, and be able to distill that down in a way that that's really what matters for the players, and in a way that allows them to interact with that plan or that environment to move them through the flow. Like you're talking about the flow of a software to, you know, let's, you know, get them to the checkout page so they can buy some things. Or like you're at an amusement park and they always send you through like the gift shop on the way out, right? There's a flow to that on purpose. And so what is our flow is in creating our environment so that we're sort of driving them towards optimal performance. And the other visual I think about when it comes to this is, how many times have you been outside, and let's say it's a courtyard or a walkway or there's sidewalks, and but you maybe you're in like a grassy field, right? And I'm sure you've seen this visual where you've got this beautifully designed courtyard with walkways, but then there's this patch of grass that's worn out where everybody walks. They don't walk on the sidewalk or the cobblestones. They're walking right across the grass. So this concept that, you know, it's that the form really follows the function, and making your environment and your facilities even, and everything that you're doing functional, putting, as you said, the user in the middle. So like that player centered experience, what are some ways that you found with your club, with Team Canada, or talking to other organizations, some of the best ways to do that, to keep and be mindful of putting the players in the middle and then building that environment around them so that the user experience is sound?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure the name of that is Elephant Tracks, where you have the perfectly designed walkway and then you have the, I think it's called Elephant Tracks, but it has an actual name. Yeah, good question. I mean, the place to start is to talk to your players. And that sounds really elementary, but it's not, because again, we've, you know, it's not lost on me the generation or the generations of leadership styles that we've come from, in that it was very authoritative and it was very much the leader did everything, and that was fine. You know, people kind of get their pitchforks out about, you know, old school leadership, but contextually it made sense. That's what we came from. We come from a wartime era where those hierarchies were very, very useful, and those hierarchies in business proved very, very useful as well. And we've evolved past that. And so I'm not someone who says like you shouldn't, you know, do this and the old school leaders and that sort of stuff, because it's, you know, we're all using parts of our history to guide us, but I think we're moving past that. And so, yeah, going and talking to your players and understanding who they are is really at the core of what we're calling user experience. And this is what organizations pay a lot of money to do, is like business organizations, to understand their users. And how they do that is they just go and talk to them. Like, afflictions do you have that we might not know about? You know, what has really stood out to me is how many people have vision impairment, how many people can't read, or how many people are dyslexic, or how many people, you know, there's all these afflictions that we don't even talk about. And the reason that's important is because when you think about using a website, if you can't see half the page because you have vision impairment, or you can't read this big block of text, you could have the most beautiful, it could be a Malcolm Gladwell-esque paragraph that you've put together, and it's this weaving story about how great your product is and blah, 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 blah. But if the user is sitting there being like, all these letters are jumbled, then what good is it for? And so, yeah, the place to start for coaches is to move past this kind of, I'm going to stand there and deliver the content to you and in one way, and then you're going to comprehend it and then go and execute it. And actually go to people and say, who are you? Where do you come from? What are you dealing with? How do you perceive your position in the world? How, you know, what's your background? What's impacting you from a psychosocial perspective? Where's your mother from? Where's your father from? To understand all those things then just moves the needle forward on how you deliver your coaching practice.
Yeah, and to a certain extent, then you, well, to a large extent, really, you are individualizing your delivery of your coaching methods to each player so that it's received to them, hopefully, in the most optimal way or as close to optimal as you can for that individual. And putting them at the center and knowing who they are is critical. Because, you know, some players, you know, you need to have your thumb on them all the time. Some, they need space, right? They really need some space to operate. And there's lots of different sort of analogies that we could use for that. But I think too, like even sometimes simple things like an itinerary or your practice schedule, it's like, okay, here's what I think makes sense, but how does this work for your life? Right. Like in my environment, we have class schedules, they have homework, they're away from home. There's a lot of things going on. What makes the most sense in our schedule, or what makes the most sense for the flow of your day? Because a lot of times some of these decisions I think are fairly arbitrary. Like they don't really matter to me how and when we do stuff. It's just, let's make it in a user friendly way. Because I think that what we want to do is reduce friction. So we're trying to build momentum all the time. And when we create friction in our environment, it can be the enemy of that momentum. An example I have that is really new or relevant to me is we just moved into a brand new facility as our hockey team at Curry College. And when I sort of juxtapose where we are now to where we used to be, it's unbelievable how it's affected our development, and it's directly related to user experience. So in our previous facility, it was a really cold rink. You'd walk through the front door. You had to walk all the way to the other end of the building to get to our dressing room. Our dressing room was cold often. It was an old room in an old facility. So in fact, we did not even have showers and bathroom facilities in our locker room area. So then if they had to use the restroom, they had to go out back all the way across the building through the cold to use it. At the end of practice, they'd have to walk across, you know, in their robes or towels to go shower. And we practice in the morning and it's Boston and it's cold in the wintertime. So what ends up happening is that guys end up showing up to the rink like the last moment possible, like before it's before it becomes unacceptable, like now you're too late. So now we move into our new facility and it's new, it's comfortable. We have an entrance in the back of the building that puts us right into our dressing room. They have an area to take off their street clothes, put on their sort of, we call it gitch in hockey, but like your under clothes that you wear under your equipment. And it's a really nice environment. And at times, I think sometimes a coach says, oh, that might create a soft environment or whatever. But no, what happens is they show up early They enjoy being there. The flow of the room and the amenities are great. So they enjoy themselves. They spend more time together. And then what ended up happening is they go on the ice earlier. They spend more time on the ice practicing. They spend more time in the facility overall. And you build this player development improvements to our program. And all we did was change a facility. And the other thing it did was it increased that internal pride of the program, because you feel kind of, well, you do, you feel special, and you feel that you're part of a program that is really meaningful. Not that we didn't feel that before, but there is a difference now going in with just the change of a facility.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not soft at all. It's, you know, I spent some time with Duncan French, who runs the high performance program at UFC, and their facility in Las Vegas. If you get the opportunity to go there, definitely do and see if you can get a tour of those facilities, because his job when he started was to travel around the world for 12 or 18 months studying facilities and studying the user experience to attract the greatest UFC fighters in the world to Las Vegas, to their facility. And it's literally counted the steps between the dressing room and the kitchen so they can grab a banana, and the dressing room and the ice bath, and the dressing room and the gym opens up because it's Las Vegas for me. And so what you're describing is exactly right. It creates this connection even with the building. And like, I get it. I'm from Aussie Rules. If you want to see like a hard ass sport, like jump on YouTube and have a look at my sport. It's 36 guys punching the shit out of each other in Melbourne winter, not like wearing a sleeveless jersey. So I get that hard mindset methodology. But again, we've moved past that. And yeah, I agree with you. I think there's a couple of things here. There's putting them in that right environment. And then also from a cultural perspective and how you build connection and understanding between the group, is coaches need to simplify messaging and then like explain why we're doing things. So to what you were talking about earlier, DJ, was these little decisions that you make about when practice is, or you know, I found it really useful to explain why and explain your process in coming up with like, this is the day that we're going to have, and here's why. Here's all the things I had to factor in. So you start to eliminate those discussions that players are having in their head about, oh, geez, coach has screwed me here, or like, oh, it's 9 o'clock. I don't perform well at night. Like, these are the conversations that are going on in players' heads, and they're blaming you. But they're blaming you because they don't understand how much goes into that decision. You know, whether it's the ice time, whether it's the fact that, you know, parents are part of the decision making, or, you know, there's so many dynamics, but we've never given players an insight into any of that. We've just made them show up at that time in the cold rink and said, go and do this. And there's an opportunity for us to, yeah, start to move the ball towards, let's put them in a nice environment, and then let's explain why we're doing this to them. And I think that's intimidating for a lot of coaches, is just, this will upset some people, but because they're not good coaches, quite frankly, like, they don't understand the root cause of what they're doing. They're just regurgitating what, you know, how they view the game or what they went through as a player. But if you can get to those root causes, players will come to the facility earlier if they're in a nice environment, it's warm, and they can have a shower before training, because that's what they actually want to do. But they weren't doing that because they had to get in a towel, go across the rink, then come back, get cold again, then put their gitch on, then put their uniform on. Do you know what I mean? Like,
100%.
There's so many opportunities for us here. Like, it's kind of a blank slate now to create what we want as coaches and factor in all these things.
Yeah, and I think even regardless of the facility you have, you don't always have control over a lot of these things. And we're very fortunate that we've now moved into this new facility. But you can do, with this in mind, you can create a better environment where, with whatever you work, like, use what you got. Like, my wife teaches elementary school, and like, her definition for improvise is use what you got. And that's kind of what you have to do. You know, look at where you're at, but think about, put yourself some empathy to put yourself in the shoes and to actually ask the questions and find out how your athletes are feeling and what works best for them, and create a better environment in within what you have to work with. There's a theory of motivation called total motivation. I don't know if you've come across it in any of your research, but it looks at the direct motivators of play, purpose, and potential. And these are the things that you really want to build and emphasize in your athletes. And then it has indirect motivators, which really detract from performance. And a lot of it comes to do with pressure. One of them is inertia. So the sense that, well, why do you play? Well, I play because I've always played. So this idea of like inertia, where you're just continuing on because it's just what you've always done. And I think even the most motivated and passionate people in their sport do have an element of inertia in the sense that they have done it their whole life. So there is still that, like, that's part of their identity to a certain extent, and they just keep doing it. But if you have athletes that maybe that inertia score is higher and they're feeling bigger levels of, well, I don't really know why I'm doing this anymore, but so I keep doing it because it's what I've always done. If you make things harder, or if you make them do things that just don't make sense or that don't fit, like, it doesn't make sense that I have to walk back and forth three times in this rink right now in the freezing cold, then you really, what you're doing is you're accentuating or emphasizing that feeling of inertia. And what we want to do is decrease that for all of them, even your highest, most motivated players. So that's an interesting way to think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the neuroscience supports that too. Like, later today, I've got a phone call with a neuroscientist that I have known for some time now, and she comes from DARPA in the United States, which is the, you know, military started essentially neuroscience division. And some of the training and research they've done with people across the military, but specifically snipers, is just incredible in terms of their, how they train them and how they manage to get them into flow state quicker, and the recall of performance that they can have and put themselves into a mindset of focus and flow. And so the reason that I love talking to her is because you start to realize what's possible. Like, my players are elite amateurs. They're not snipers in the military, but I can take away things from that conversation to weave into my program about how to better prepare our athletes and myself as a performer in terms of, well, this is possible. So if we can start to move towards that, and we can start to train the mind to get them into be ready for performance, I think the value there is exponential. Like, that's breakthrough knowledge right there for me. You don't need to be the United States military to be able to take that knowledge and go, hey, we can't do that, but we can do this, which is close.
Exactly. And that's the power of getting out and, like you mentioned, the UFC facility, and getting out and spending time with coaches in new environments. And you can see how they're doing that. I've had a lot of value from spending time with some Division I coaches in the NCAA and learning how they operate their program. And I always leave those interactions thinking, man, I can't do it quite like they do, but there's pieces of that that I can take and add to what we're doing to improve. And it's interesting what you said there about performing and even as coaches. And I think that's a great opportunity to get into another subject that I know you're passionate about and I'm really interested in as well, is the coach is a performer. And you have a book coming out, The Tough Stuff, that gets into this. But your tweet, I think from yesterday, it was how I'd like to intro this part of the conversation, which is, you said, we hear way too much about the trophies and not enough about the sleepless nights. Can you jump into that for me?
Yeah, this is something that I guess I'm accidentally passionate about, but what I've observed over the last 5 years of being a head coach and simultaneously interviewing some of the greatest performers in the world, from your, you know, your Patrick Dempsey's to your Tony Granados, is, yeah, just how much we don't set ourselves up to succeed as leaders. So the irony of it is we know the impact of sleepless nights because we study it for our players. And then we know the impact of just going to the McDonald's drive-through on the way to practice because we study it for our athletes. And we know the impact of imposter syndrome, and we know the impact of mindset. We know the impact of flow, and we know the impact of not going home and seeing our family. And we have all these lessons because we are supposed to be the experts in high performance. But then head coaches in particular apply none of those lessons to themselves. In fact, it's the other way around. We make legends out of the NFL coach that spends 3 hours sleeping a night on the futon in the office and doesn't go home and see his kids. And that cannot continue. It is just, it's poor practice. And I get it, at the elite of the elite, the you know, the delta on performance and the difference can be, you know, I'll continue on the NFL. The difference is like, the position of a thumb on a shoulder pad is the difference between a play working and not working. I get those fine margins, but what I want to draw people's attention to with this book and just in talking more about it is that better served by you being in a constant state of fatigue as a head coach? Are you going to truly uncover that wrinkle in the opposition defense? Or if you went and had 10 hours of sleep and got up and had breakfast with your daughter who made you feel better about your day and you were more alert and now you are kind of optimized from a family perspective, could you find that wrinkle in the defense and another one and another one? And I know there's so much context to this, but I want to be the one that puts my hand up and says, we need to start thinking about this because no one else is talking about this kind of thing. But the point is, we as head coaches in particular are high performance knowledge workers, and we need to treat ourselves as such.
I mean, that's profound and breakthrough knowledge. And there is such an irony to it, as you say, because we do know these things, but we're ignoring them when it comes to ourselves. And our job really is to make great decisions. That's the job as the head coach. And we know that if you're tired and you're fatigued, you're less likely to be successful as often at making great decisions or noticing things like you mentioned. So what happens often is in college hockey, and I think in pro it's even worse because their schedule is – they play more games. And in college, our schedule is a lot more regimented, where we will play a Friday, Saturday game schedule. But so often on that Friday night after the game, you're watching video and it's almost like you say, there's a bit of that legend, or you make this badge of honor that, hey, I stayed up till 3 a.m. watching video, but then you had a staff meeting at 8 a.m. to go over everything. Well, you're really not being very effective. And then you expect to be able to be on the top of your game later that day in the game when you have to make decisions on the fly in a very volatile environment. And it doesn't make much sense. And I think a great way to also explain this is it's the same way how, and I've seen this happens to me all the time, where I'll be watching video in the summertime or in the off season of our team, just looking at things from the year before. It's amazing the clarity at which I see the game and areas of strength and areas of weakness of our team in July, when I'm like, how did I not see this in January? And I think that's exactly, like you said, there's context to it. Like you don't have the luxury of time like you do in July, but we can set ourselves up for better success.
Yeah, and you know, as well is that there's also context to the behavior that we're exhibiting for ourselves and what that does to others. So the big thing that I've found as a pattern that keeps coming up in all the head coaches that I've interviewed for this book, and these are guys in the NFL, the NHL, you know, the top of the top, and is even if you don't recognize it, people watch you as a head coach and they mimic your behavior. So even if you've, you know, been at the club for 10 years, you've been an assistant coach, and then you get the top job, you don't think you've changed, but everyone else in the organization does because your title has changed. And we know this because there's millions of organizations. I'm sitting here in downtown Toronto, TJ, and so, you know, there's office buildings everywhere, and in every single one of them, as soon as the CEO walks in, everyone sits up a little bit straighter, they articulate a little bit better, and they change their behavior completely versus when the CEO is not in the room. That's what you deal with as a head coach. Everyone treats you differently, even if you've been there for ages. And so they're watching you. And so it's not just about your well-being and your capacity and your high performance. Is if you're in the office watching video at 3 a.m., well, your assistant coaches probably haven't gone home. If you're in a pro environment, the interns certainly haven't. And so now you're driving a culture of fatigue. So you see it as hard work. I've got to work hard. You know, this is my only opportunity to be a head coach. If I mess this up, I don't get another chance. That's great. But you're also making everyone worse, because you won't go home and go to bed. And so, yeah, we just need to rethink this, like you said, badge of honor. That's perfect. It's not a badge of honor. Go home, go to bed, see your wife, see your daughter. Like, you know, that's what I see as manning up, not being there at 3:30 a.m. and then getting a couple of hours kip on the futon.
Right. It's a good point about modeling behavior. And it's the same thing about nutrition and, you know, your physical health and physical appearance. Like, we're coaching athletes. We don't have to be in world-class condition, because that's not our role to go out there and compete anymore. But I do think you have a responsibility to stay in good physical health, to show your athletes that, hey, these are some values that are important to us and me and all of us. And also just the mental wellness that comes with that too. Like, you know, I think the value of taking 30, 45, an hour, whatever you can find in your day and have some physical activity. So to help your physical health, your mental health, but then also give yourself a time to let your mind wander, whatever your chosen activity is. Like, I really enjoy in the summer times stand-up paddleboarding. And what I love about that is I'm out on the water. I have no technology on me. I'm getting sun on my body, so I feel good about that. I'm getting exercise, so I feel like I'm getting in better shape. I'm having fun because it's so much fun. But then if I'm out on the water for, it doesn't matter, 30 minutes or 90 minutes, my mind is just going, and it's amazing how all of a sudden thoughts start to consolidate, and you get all these aha moments or new ideas where, like, we don't set up our lives in a way that's happening enough. We're so inundated all the time. Like, I can't even stand in line at the grocery store without looking at my phone for like 3 minutes. So,
right.
You're right. So that, I think there's other real strong benefits to that stuff.
Definitely. And to be clear, this takes bravery, because what you're doing is, you know, to live this kind of life and be the example, you essentially need to break from tradition. And I understand that. I understand some people are going to be listening to this and I'm like, oh, this is a bit fair weather for me. Like, when am I going to have time to do this? Or, you know, that's not how it's done in our sport. And again, I've been around high performance sport my whole life, and I get it, right? It's tough. And also, you know, the context can be, this is my one chance. I want to work my ass off until I've made it. I understand all of that. But I think there's some great examples of people that are already doing it. And I would argue they're going to jump ahead of you. And, you know, I know coaches who protect, and this is what it's about, protecting your time. I know coaches who protect game minus five to game minus two to meditate in the locker room. So let's just think about that for a second. That is peak, last minute, rah, 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 like, you know, either get motivation or get last minute instructions into their players. Like, don't let them get out on the ice without, you know, them being as prepared as possible. Like, game minus five to game minus two, that is like, for a coach, we treat that as gold, right? In every sport in the world. And here is a Division I NCAA men's basketball coach who's meditating. So what sort of message do you think that sends to the players? One, it's okay to meditate. It's okay to have time for yourself. Two, I'm a performer as well. And I'm going to be able to coach you better when you're on the floor if I'm in a good space and I'm gracious and I'm, you know, alert. And then, you know, we know the lessons. We know the impact that this can have on performance. And so what I'm saying to you is we can do this. We can protect time for paddleboarding, can protect time for a walk, can protect time for meditation right up until game time.
That's brilliant, because not only is that coach putting himself in the right frame of mind, he's also giving permission and turning over that time to his players, because he's not talking to them. So now they have to find what it is that they're going to do to get themselves into it. And there's no way they can take that time for granted and not use it effectively if they know their coach is meditating, right? Right. So I think it's really, that's really interesting. So I would really encourage anybody who's listening to follow you on Twitter. It's at Cody Royal, correct?
That's it. Yeah. At
Cody Royal. Your website is codyroyal.com.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything is kind of consolidated there. So all my, you know, you can contact me there. My Twitter handle is on there. Podcast, book, like all that sort of stuff is all there. Yeah.
Like I said, I've been following you from the beginning of my podcast journey, and it's spawned into my own blog and podcast and my own sort of growth journey through this. And so much of what you've done has inspired me to get going, and so much of your thoughts have given me lots of food for thought. So I really can't encourage people enough to get on top of the things that you're doing and follow you. If you feel comfortable with it, can you take a moment and talk a little bit about your new book that's coming out and when it might be coming out?
Yeah, I'd love to. So as you said earlier, it's called The Tough Stuff, and that's because it is the tough stuff of coaching. I think it's interesting because we haven't spoken beforehand. Well, between that tweet that you read out earlier and now, we hadn't really spoken. And so it was interesting to hear that struck a chord with you. And what I'm finding out is that the more I talk about this tough stuff, the more people resonate with it and say, yeah, me too. And so that's really encouraged me to go ahead and write it. And really the idea is kind of what we've been talking about, in that, you know, it's aimed at head coaches specifically. So the reason for that is that only head coaches really know what it's like to be a head coach. Again, you can be the most seasoned assistant in the world and you still don't get it. And it's exactly the same I said before about corporate CEOs. The CFO doesn't quite get the dynamic, and the COO doesn't quite get the dynamic. And ironically, for CEOs, there are all sorts of support groups that are like invite only, just the CEOs. And then head coaches, we have none of that. We have maybe the coaches association might put something together, but you're talking to your competitors, so you're not really going to open up about what you're struggling with. You're certainly not going to tell them that you went and slept for more than 3 hours, because they think they get a competitive advantage. But all of that kind of snowballed together. And I just one day at the start of COVID, I opened up a notepad and I just wrote the tough stuff. And then I wrote a list of things that head coaches struggle with. Imposter syndrome. Yeah, they have it too. Like, a lot of coaches struggle with imposter syndrome. Loneliness, definitely. Again, everyone changes their perspective of you when you become the head coach. You're the one now. And that drives loneliness, and so does emotional exhaustion. There's studies into that now. So again, you not going to bed and you being emotionally exhausted actually helps facilitate your loneliness. It's not just social isolation. The sleeplessness that we talked about, the fact that we as men in particular are not conditioned to recognize our own emotions and deal with our own emotions, let alone be able to coach young men or women in a society now that encourages them to recognize and acknowledge their own emotions and talk about them. So, we're the ones that actually need to catch up, not like this generation of athletes aren't coming back our way. And so I started to just jot down ideas, and then that I started to validate them with, people around the professional leagues and just say, do you struggle with this stuff? And a little bit of reframing of culture and the cultures that we can set up. And really what it comes out is kind of this idea of the head coach of the future, which is really what we've been talking about. An open, honest, brave, transparent head coach that protects time for themselves and is optimized. And so, the idea, hopefully, is to get the book out January, aiming for early January. So,
terrific.
The tough stuff.
That's awesome. I'm really looking forward to that. I can't wait to read it. And I really appreciate your time today. It's awesome to connect with you. And it's like I said, it is special for me because to get you on this podcast when you were the first one I listened to in my headphones is awesome. So thanks a lot.
No, it's lovely to hear, and I admire you and your work and your blog and you've kind of jumped in with both feet, and I admire that. So well done, and absolute honor to be on. I'm delighted you asked.
Awesome. Thanks, Cody.